Good evening, one and all. I know, another Tuesday, another week's gone now. It's not far off till the end of August, I'm telling you. Where's it all gone? Well, one thing it has gone is we've had a lot of nice weather, haven't we? Talking to my sort of family back in England and, looking out what's going on in Europe, and it's amazing the sort of amount of all over the world. If it's not flooding, it's heat waves and stuff like that. I think there was one thing that was at one point in the Thames. It must be the upper reaches of the Thames, but you can walk across the Thames. I know that in part of the Rhine, the barges can't get down because there's only about 6 foot of water in this spot down the Rhine and stuff like that. And yet, here you go looking in the news and everything, and there's floods going on. It's not one thing, the other. Global warming? What are they talking about, eh? As if. Anyway, what we're talking about is my guest today, because we've had quite a few lately guests who've come on the show, and they sort of done perhaps some non-fiction stuff, and then they suddenly thought, why not try a fiction novel? But yeah, we can have a fiction novel, but something different. Well, not quite different, because we talk about it a lot in the show with how the characters lead you and stuff like that that we have in the shows, the stuff I always go on about, you know that. Anyway, my guest today, she's one of those. She's gone from non-fiction to now producing not one but two fiction books. Well, one's almost out. We'll get to find a bit more about that when we get going, but I better introduce her, haven't I? Because on the show today I have the one and only Carolyn Korsmeyer. Hi, Carolyn. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Barry. Nice to have you here.
It's nice to have you here on this show with me. As I said, you've done quite a few non-fiction books because you are a research professor of philosophy, and that's at the University of Buffalo.
Yes, that's correct. Most of my publications so far have been in that field, the field of philosophy. So, as you mentioned in your introduction, my fiction writing is relatively recent.
Because the name Kant comes to mind. The sort of stuff that you do. It's the food and touch side that people don't sort of do so much of. Now, when I sort of read that, I thought, okay, is this me sitting, smelling Sunday roast or remembering times at home when I was growing up, sitting out in the kitchen with the family having Sunday roast? How does that sort of relate?
To my philosophical work, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I'll give you a kind of indirect answer because it's a little bit complicated. The field of philosophy, excuse me. My cup of tea is needed.
I was going to say, you're like me, you could have your cup of tea.
The field of philosophy in which I've done most of my work is an area called aesthetics and philosophy of art. Uh-huh. And most of philosophy, as you might know, is very mentally directed.
Right.
That is to say, it's interested in reason and in argumentation and so forth. And somewhere along the line when I was working in aesthetics, it occurred to me to wonder why literal taste, the kind that we eat with, didn't form any part of the standard focus for research in aesthetics. Because in that area, for most of its history, taste has referred to taste in manners and in society and, of course, in art.
Right.
So about 20-odd years ago, I started investigating the aesthetics of literal taste, the kind we have in our mouth.
Yeah.
And I wrote called Making Sense of Taste, Food, and Philosophy. And that book generated further interest in the so-called bodily senses. Bodily senses are the ones that have a feel to them. Touch, taste, and smell are the external bodily senses, as opposed to vision and hearing, which, as a rule, we take in information about the world with vision and hearing, but it doesn't feel like anything unless the sound is piercing or booming.
Right.
And we don't have a bodily sense. So bodily sensations. And that has led me to work on certain kinds of emotions, such as the emotion of disgust, which is a very physical, visceral kind of response. I wrote a book on that called Savoring Disgust, The Foul and the Fair in Aesthetics, and most recently in philosophy, a book called Things in Touch with the Past, where I speculate that the role of touch is very strong in our understanding, appreciation, and encounters with objects that are old and rare and from the past, right, putting us in contact with something.
That's very true, because I know one of the things I do is I got a stall at flea market and stuff like that, and I know that people just like touching old things. It's like tactile or memories or something like that. But you get people come up to the old stuff and they just like touching them and holding them. So you can see that even now, you know, when people, they don't realize they're doing it, but they just have that want to touch.
Yes. I think that's a very interesting phenomenon. Psychologically, it's interesting. Historically, it's interesting because it has such a role in different periods of culture. But philosophically, it's interesting and I think understudied. That's one of the areas that I tried to probe in that book.
Well, you've had these 2-3 whatever it is books, and then you suddenly did a fictional book. What led you to work on that?
You know, I knew you would ask me that question, and I was trying to remember the answer. It's quite The fact is, and I think this is probably true for many people who turn to fiction as a sort of second career, which is the case for me, and I think for some of your previous guests, I suspect that all of us have always been writers. Mm. But most of those writings have languished in the bottoms of drawers or the backs, yes, of filing cabinets, or now in the increasingly elusive bowels of our computers. And the book that first came out, the one called Charlotte Story that I'll talk about in a moment, mm-hmm, actually is not the first one I wrote. The first one I started writing and actually finished, I began in, believe it or not, 2004.
Wow.
But it's only out next year. So what prompted me to finally turn my attention to really finishing fiction? Well, for one thing, I retired from teaching, but I think actually the other thing is I retired before I left teaching. I had been in a department chair, an administrator in my department, mm-hmm, the aftermath of which was sufficiently, depressing that I decided.
Right.
Let's just say it had an aftertaste. And I decided to do something quite different. So I went back and I finished some manuscripts. And I find that I just really love the fictional world. It's an escape for me as a writer, but it also is one that I explore and get very acquainted. This sounds crazy to someone who doesn't write fiction, but I think it's quite familiar to fiction writers. You really get to know your characters.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And
yes,
they become independent of you.
Yep.
And you're curious to know what they're like and to judge what you're going to write next to see if it fits their personalities or develops their lives in any particular way.
This is the thing we always go on about is if you have a choice, because quite often the characters lead you down through the story. You want to do one thing, they go somewhere else totally. Some minor characters want larger roles, and some characters indeed want their own book. And it's like this whole thing people say about writer's block. I think writer's block is because you ignored the characters the day before and they don't want to talk to you anymore. I worry. Go ahead.
I think that's a very interesting observation. It's bad luck for me to say this, but writer's block often just goes away if you take a long walk and, yep, start thinking and they talk to you.
Yeah. Oh yeah, when I wrote my books, my YA book, for instance, I was doing a lot of running. I was, in sort of over 40, 50s competitive running, held of Southeast England and stuff like that. So I used to go out on these sort of 4 or 5 mile training runs, and I used to get these stories going on in my head. And the trouble is, you either have to stop and try and scrawl something down on a sweaty piece of paper, or try and remember it until you get home, sort of thing. But it isn't. Why I said at the beginning about the whole business that we bring this stuff up is because when you did write your book, which is called Charlotte's Story, it's characters from a famous book, but they're not the famous characters, but you've taken these other characters and produced the story, their story.
I've always been interested. The book you're referring to, of course, is Pride and Prejudice, Jane Austen, maybe her most famous novel. And Charlotte's Story is about Jane Austen's main character's best friend. Her name is Charlotte Lucas. Charlotte Lucas, as I'm sure many of your listeners know, is Elizabeth Bennet's best friend. And she's the woman who makes the calculated marriage to William Collins, the talkative, garrulous, comical, slightly dislikable clergyman. And I have always thought, ever since I first read the book many years ago, ever since I first read Austen many years ago, I always thought that Charlotte Lucas's story needed some more attention. I thought she was given a bit of a short shrift. And so I decided I would try to imagine an overlapping story that dovetails with events in Pride and Prejudice, but comes from her point of view after she has married William Collins and discovered that maybe she didn't make the best choice. But what's she going to do about that? She's not going to go off in a huff. She's not going to get a divorce. That wasn't done. She's going to make the best of it, but how? And so that was the launching of my story. The other thing I find interesting about Austen, if I could carry on with this
Of
theme
course,
for a
please do.
moment, Jane Austen is often praised for her high moral standards in her fiction, which I think is both true and not true. She has a very narrow gauge that is imposed, of course, by the societies that she writes about. And because she writes from a female perspective of these middle-class landed women, not aristocrats as a rule, and usually not, certainly not poor women, they have to tread a very narrow path of propriety in order to achieve happiness as well as do what they should. So as a consequence, we have this real entanglement in Austen's work between manners and morals. And I think that's a fascinating mixture. We all probably live in that kind of a world, but in her world, it's really visible. And Charlotte Lucas has to tread a very careful path between being a wife who has certain responsibilities and a daughter and a friend. She has good friends, but also standing up for loyalty and combating her husband in ways that she really disapproves of his actions in very serious manners ways. But she's also trying to find for herself a path to happiness. And it was just fun and intriguing to try to figure out how she might do that.
Right, as you say, she's in, especially in those times, there was so much, was seen to be done, not seen to be done, the responsibilities, especially with her husband, who, and his role in the village society, what have you. It was not easy for her at all, and the fact that she, I'm guessing that he sort of. She had her friendships affected, I'm guessing, because, you know, he didn't want her to meet such and such, and you can't spend time with this. You know, it's very hard for her to do that, plus show the image of the loyal wife, you know, with the day-to-day stuff and the village people or whatever, neighbours, you know, family even. Must be very hard.
Yes, yes. I think I gave her a little bit of leeway in the story by setting a certain amount of it when she's away from her husband, traveling with female friends in Bath.
Right.
Great deal of fun. And the other aspect of Austen, by the way, is Austen is a wonderfully comic writer. And, of course, comic writers are not necessarily funny, ha-ha, but they have a grain of sharpness to them. And so does sharpness, so does Charlotte. And I give her some wit. I hope I gave her some wit.
Right.
And it ends up, I don't want to give away the story.
Of course not. No.
It gets a little complicated and also quite unconventional at the end. But I tried to show a young woman making not only peace, but also making a very good set of risky choices. And she had a lot of luck with her friends, where everything turned out to be, I think, pretty happy for everybody, even though it's by no means anything they would have anticipated before.
Right, indeed. What sort of response have you had to the book?
Well, I think it's been pretty good. I've had several nice reviews, some of which liked the wit of the book. I've had friends tell me that they really enjoyed it because they thought I was quite successful in adapting Austen's style.
That's what I was going to ask, right? That's yeah.
A tricky one. That's a very tricky one. I by no means would say I write like Jane Austen, because nobody writes like Jane Austen.
No, of course not.
But I tried to, because I'm speaking in Charlotte's voice, it's a first-person narration.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm speaking in her voice, I tried to speak as she might have had she had a bigger role in Pride and Prejudice. And I also took a liberty that I did check legally beforehand. Every now and then, and I think about maybe 9 or 10 places, I actually lifted some phrases, some sections, short sections, from Pride and Prejudice itself to insert Charlotte's point of view into a section that the attentive reader will recognize from
the
original.
But you now know what she's thinking. Right, I get you.
Yes, yeah. And how it plays out there. And I do alert the reader to those sections in the prologue, because originally I wanted to highlight them to call attention to the fact that here we are in Jane Austen's voice, but the publisher didn't want to print it that way. So I had to settle for just flagging the fact that I had done that. There aren't very many places. Most of them are just insertions into a plot that we normally know about from, say, Elizabeth Bennet's point of view. But that was one way that I tried to keep my own prose reasonably consonant with Austen's prose.
Right.
While not...
Very good idea. I like that. I like that idea a lot. You did say that this wasn't the first book you wrote. In fact, the first book you wrote, is that the one that's coming out beginning of next year?
Yes. Can I talk about that one
for a bit? Of course you can. Please go ahead.
Well, it's very, very different. Several people have asked me if there will be a sequel to Charlotte. The answer is no, at least not now. What this next book is a kind of mystery or thriller, maybe. It's called Little Follies, A Mystery at the Millennium. And I started writing it in 2004 when I was living in Krakow, Poland. And it takes place in Krakow. And it features two Americans who are there for an academic semester. One of them is a historian who's researching some papers at an imaginary museum. I made up the place.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is his girlfriend, who's a journalist, but who's been injured. So she hasn't been able to write for a while. And they cross paths with a character who is semi-delusional and who believes that he has a secret that will give him some occult powers at the millennium, the turn of the 20th century, I mean the 21st century, from 1999 to 2000, that will give a special power to transform his life to one of great nobility. And it gets a little tangled, needless to say.
Right, of course. Great stuff, yeah.
These people crossed paths at this museum, and the dubious character, the delusional character, has hired some thieves to steal two things from the museum. One is a newly authenticated Leonardo da Vinci painting. That may sound familiar. The other is a pure silver cup that has magical powers.
Yeah.
Anyway, there are a couple of murders and some dangerous things and some realigned friendships and et cetera. So that was a lot of fun. But I got to tell you, when I finished the story first, it was about 50% longer than it needed to be, than it had to be in order to find a press. And it contained too many characters. So I had to rewrite it multiple times. And fortunately, I managed to slim it down, streamline the plot, get rid of some extraneous characters, and find a publisher. So that one's coming out in January. It's a lot of fun. I hope you will find it a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's got everything in it, isn't it? Like murder, theft, magic, you know, and a marriage, I believe, as well in it. I mean, it's got everything in that book.
There's no marriage in that one. That refers to a marriage.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Broken relationship that is realigned with somebody else who had lived in...
My mistake, sorry.
No, it's okay. I wanted to say one... I don't know where we are in time, but I wanted to drop a little incidental remark in there that nearly derailed me with this story. The painting that I place in the Rydzinski Museum in Krakow, which I've made up, there is no such place, is a painting that is authenticated in the story, Little Follies, as being Leonardo da Vinci's Salvator Mundi. Mm-hmm. I wrote that in 2004. To my surprise and dismay, over 10 years later, I think it was 2017, another painting, Leonardo da Vinci's Salvator Mundi, was sold for $450 million, newly authenticated.
Wow.
And for a while I thought, oh my God, I can't use this painting. The story is ruined. But I decided Leonardo was pretty good at painting more than one thing at a time.
I think so.
And both paintings are under contention, both the fictional one and the non-fictional one. But it ends a little surprising aspect of verisimilitude to a plot that was intended to be entirely fanciful.
Ah. It sounds like it's, you know, it's the sort of book that a lot of people are going to pick up on, that one. And it's funny how these things, you know, what you write sometimes come to fruition later on. I've just realized the marriage thing. I just realized where I was going with that. That was the contest you won. Mark Twain thing. That's where I was going wrong. I slipped down too far down the page. Time is beating us, Carolyn. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you. Have you tell everybody where they can find more about you and your books and everything like that. So over to you.
Well, thank you. I will do that. But let me first say thank you to you, Barry, for a very enjoyable chat.
My pleasure.
Okay,
over to you.
Over to me, yes. Information about me is most easily obtained at my website, which is myname.com. That is to say, CarolynKorsmeyer.com. The last name is spelled KorsMeyer. On that website, you can find information about my philosophy books, those I've written, those I've edited, a few articles, and also about these two novels that I've just been discussing. Charlotte's Story, the one about Charlotte Lucas, was published in 2021 by Touchpoint Press, and it can be found either through Touchpoint Press or through outlets like Amazon.com. The second one, Little Folly, A Mystery at the Millennium, will be coming out in January from Black Rose Writing.
Oh, okay.
And that is available now for pre-order from Black Rose Writing, which I'm sorry to say I didn't write down the exact website, but I think you can get it just by www.blackrosewriting.littlefollies. And you can also, once that is published, that will also be available through Amazon, through other online sources, such as, I think, Barnes & Noble and so forth. But for the moment, that's just on pre-order from Black Rose. So I hope some of your listeners will be interested in checking out these stories. Thank you.
Thank you, Carolyn. Thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure having you on your show. Really enjoyed it. And thank you very much for being a guest.
Good night.
My guest today, Carolyn Korsmeyer. So Corolyn. And Korsmeyer is Korsmeyer. Put those together, add a .com, and you've got her website. And we've been talking about, well, her philosophy-type books, as well as her two fictional ones, Charlotte's Story. And as we heard, it's Pride and Prejudice from Charlotte Lucas's point of view. And the other one is Little Follies, A Mystery at the Millennium. And as she said, comes out January, Black Rose Writing. And the link's there on her website as well, so you can link there for your pre-ordering and stuff like that. Well, that's it for today. I'll be back with a fresh guest tomorrow. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget.